Welcome to episode 70 of the Rugby League Republic podcast with your hosts Tish and Dr. T. In this episode, we discuss the top six things we learned from round two of the 2017 Rugby League World Cup. Join us as we build a rugby league community for all. The Rugby League Republic podcast starts right now. All right, welcome to episode 70 of the Rugby League Republic podcast, where our aim is to build an online rugby league community for everyone. Each week, we bring you the everyday fan's perspective on the biggest news and issues in the world of rugby league, and we break it all down for you in our own unique way. I am your co-host, Dr. T, joining me, Tish. Tish, round two of the World Cup. Have you been enjoying it so far?
Oh, well, I have been, and 70 is a really good number. First time the Fijians got a past 70, and so I'm doing absolutely good. And I think you're doing a lot there, a lot better, Dr. T, because your Italian heritage must have made you feel proud of the Azzurri.
Well, it's always good when we can defeat a team to nil. But if we're talking about a USA team that is, not exactly a world superpower in rugby league, it feels a little bit empty. Having said that, though,
yes,
I'm looking forward to the Italians performing a miracle against Fiji and defeating them by 50 points.
What?
Which is the only way they can overtake them to top their particular pool table. But anyway.
Yeah, well, I was actually thinking about it this week. Just the way the tables have lied out, particularly table C and D. I think the quarterfinals are going to be interesting this year because there's a couple of teams that have been in form, that have played well, but they're going to even miss out on the quarterfinals. So I think I think that's what's good about the Rugby League World Cup because, there's 14 teams out there and there's a lot of competitive teams this time round, and it's going to be exciting to see what's going to come up towards the quarterfinals. There were some big games this weekend and, I can't wait for round three. There are some interesting games coming up. So, let's just get straight into it, I think.
Yeah, let's get into it. So here we go with the top six things we learned from round two of the 2017 Rugby League World Cup. Here we go. Tish, you're going to have to bring the bell. Do you have the bell with you?
I have the bell with me.
You have the bell. Tackle one. Records continue to tumble. So here are just some of the records that have tumbled in round two of the World Cup. Jarrod Hayne breaking the record of most tries scored in World Cups. And he's now up to 14. He overtook Bobby Fulton there on 13. Billy Slater, I believe, is also on 13. In fact, he dropped a sitter. It was a Cooper Cronk sort of kick towards the crossbar, and unfortunately against France, he dropped it. That would have also taken him to 14. So, for the moment, for the time being, Jarrod Hayne is at the top of that, a very elite company there.
Yeah.
Most tries scored in World Cups, of course, for Australia and Fiji. So two nations he's played for.
Wow.
That's one of the records that have tumbled, at least one of the biggest ones. The second one is Sean Johnson has become the highest point scorer in New Zealand Rugby League Test history.
Wow.
So that is no mean feat as well, because there have been, I think he just overtook Matthew Ridge.
Wow.
Unbelievable when you think about it.
I'm sure the people, in the Manly and Northern Beaches, they'll be quite upset. Matthew Ridge is no longer in the record books.
Well, he's probably in the record books for other reasons, like being probably one of the most accurate goal kickers of all time. Because him and Darrell Halligan, if you remember from the 90s, were consistently laser sharp accuracy there. But in terms of actual number of points, I think a lot of it has to do with Sean Johnson, you know, being a really high sort of try scorer compared to some of the other goal kickers that have usually been wingers.
Well, he's now been crowned New Zealand's Big Johnson.
Well, there you go. I didn't know that. But he has been Sean, so
Sean of the sheep.
Sean of the New Zealand dead. the next record that's tumbled is Wade Graham was well, it's not really a record. He's in the record, but he hasn't solely got the record. But he became only the second Australian forward, with Gordon Tallis being the first, to score four tries in a single World Cup match for Australia. So that's pretty huge. I mean, he did go on a rampage there against the French.
Yep.
He seemed unstoppable close to the line. So some very good performances all around, but especially from Wade Graham.
Now, was Mr. Graham on debut?
He may have been. I think so, yes.
I think so, yeah.
As a starter, yes. As a starter, yes. So that's a huge piece of news. So there will probably be many more records to tumble, given some of the sort of big score lines that we've seen as we head into the last round. You know, Jared Hayne and look for, you know, Billy Slater as well, potentially extending or swapping the lead in terms of most number of tries scored in World Cups. They've both been on fire. Billy Slater especially, but Tish, any other records that have tumbled that I've missed?
Well, look, I think in some games there were. Look, I know that they were talking about this one in the Fiji game, but I think that was Fiji's biggest scoring margin ever.
That's right.
You know, so that is a record there, and also a big congratulations to Aaron Woods for also breaking a record. He broke Paul Gallen's record of the most unnecessary penalties conceded in a single game.
Wow.
Right. Wow. Because there was a lot. And also to the Australian forward team for not being able to pack a single scrum properly. And how embarrassing it is for the world champions to be told by the referee every scrum, get your head in, boys. Get your head in. Lock in. Lock yourselves in. Come on. And then what's that little thing they do it in the rugby union now when it's like you know, where they call it kind of like, you know, I think it's called packing or something like that. They've got a little term for packing the scrum properly. But Australia, the world champions, unable to pack a scrum properly. I think that's some sort of record.
Well, I think that must be. I got to confess, Tish, I don't watch rugby union, so I don't know what you're talking about.
right.
But in terms of records, I think if you watch the next Australian game, and we're not digging on. Well, no, we are.
Yes.
Because they're the world champions, we expect more from them. I don't think you will find even one play the ball played properly. Not one, because it's tunnel ball. I think we're playing tunnel. I think, look, we've spoken about this before, Tish. The game needs a rebranding. We've spoken about how we're not recognized as international sport.
Mm.
We're really annoyed about it. We want to do whatever we can. I've suggested many things that, you know, you have rejected some of these ideas, but I'm going to bring them up. Should we call it Northern Rugby League? Should we call it Steedon? What are we going to call? What are we going to call the game? I don't know. Let's just change it to tunnel ball, because I think that's what happens.
Mm.
We're not playing the ball; we're just tunneling the ball through our legs.
Yeah.
If you look at some of the minnows playing each other, they play it properly.
They do.
They do. They play it properly. If you look at England and New Zealand and Australia. The reason why they get a good roll on is because they don't play the ball properly.
Mm.
It wastes a few milliseconds, and that may be just enough time for the defense to get their team, their line set. And you don't want that when you're the world champions, because you're used to NRL rules where there are no rules usually when it comes to play the ball. And it's becoming obvious. And I think I've got to say, this is probably the reason why there have been so many shall we say, discrepant scorelines, blowouts,
yes,
you know, in this World Cup so far, that I think the difference between the teams with NRL sort of players and non-NRL players is quite obvious, because the those who are not used to NRL rules, or Super League for that matter,
yeah,
play the ball properly.
Play the ball.
What do you think about that, Tish?
Well, look, I agree with you. So, look, other than skill and sheer talent, the big discrepancy between these teams is the play the ball. The minnows do it properly and the professionals do it wrong. I say, yes, just look, let's not worry about the feet anymore. Let's just create a tunnel. Let's call it tunnel ball. Why don't we call it tunnel of war? Do you know what I mean? Bring back the contest, Tunnel of War. What a great name for a sport. You know, Tunnel of War, T-O-W, the toe, you know, toe ball. you know, it sounds like something you put in the back of your car. But look, I think we've got potential. But definitely a rebranding exercise is needed, and I think that I think you're onto something. I think you've actually looked beyond what we can see now, looked through the tunnel and found the white light.
That's right. And speaking of going beyond, I've gone way beyond what we're supposed to be talking about, which is the things that we've learned from round two. But, you know, look, we love this game so much. We want it to improve.
Mm.
We've got ideas, and we're gonna say them.
Yes.
What the heck?
Indeed.
What the hell? Let's go to tackle number two. Fiji and Tonga continue to show that they are the real deal. You know, not only did they have big wins against, in the case of Tonga, their sort of arch rival in the South Pacific there, Samoa. A close-ish match, but, you know, in the end they sort of toppled over Tonga, over Samoa quite easily. Fiji, on the other hand, had it very easy against who did they play?
Wales,
of course. Yeah, it's hard to tell who they flogged this week. It's always a nation that you wouldn't have expected. But anyway, but look, as good as those scores are, I think the fact that, to me, it's not the scores; it's the fact that the way they've been playing. Mm. They've just been playing so smoothly. I think Tonga in particular, we'll talk about this later, their halves are, you know, they're doing quite well. It's not just that they've got both teams, they've got NRL experience in wingers or forwards or whatever. They've got something going on. They've got slick backline movements. They do the hard yards. They do everything right. However, the real test will come when they're up against real opposition, T1 opposition. So for Tonga, it's going to happen this week against New Zealand, the first time that either of these nations is going to come up against a T1 nation. Fiji, or this World Cup, I mean, Fiji won't be tested until they get to the quarterfinals, and we'll talk a bit later about how the quarterfinal draw looks and who they are most likely to play in the quarterfinals. But it is pretty much guaranteed that they will make the quarterfinals, unless the Batty lose by, I think it's around 50 points to Italy, which is very unlikely, as much as I'd like that to happen. Fiji and Tonga are definitely out of the out of the South Pacific nations that we mentioned last week. I think they impressed a lot more than PNG did. I think they were able to sort of show that the first week flogging wasn't a fluke. What are your thoughts on Fiji and Tonga? Are they the real deal? Have we seen enough to show that we are confident going into a real tough game, especially for Tonga?
Well, look. I'll address Fiji first. I think that Fiji, it was very important for them to actually win this game against Wales, because it's the first time actually that they've actually won two games consecutively in the World Cup. So
there's another record that tumbled.
We forgot to mention that.
There you go.
Yeah, so there you go. So the fact that they've been able to put two together shows that they're sort of building, shows that, you know, that, you know, they can sort of string together a World Cup campaign. Now, I think Italy is actually a really good test for them to play this week, because I think the competition is getting a little tougher for them. There is some missing elements to the Fijian team, I believe. I mean, the defense really hasn't come under that much scrutiny or testing as of yet. So sure, it'd be interesting to see how the Italians, with a bit more attacking players such as James Tedesco and so forth, it'd be interesting to see how they're able to handle that. But they're building, and some of the tries they scored, it wasn't just tries that, you know, that a Welsh or a Minnow team would concede. They were tries that probably England, New Zealand, and Australia would find it hard to contain. Some of the cutout passes, which, you know, that Jarrod Hayne put together, some of the plays, you know, he just looks so relaxed, so confident in that organizing, you know, 5/8 attacking role that he's got at the moment. That, you know, it's a wonder why more clubs or more teams that have had Jarrod Hayne haven't thought about Jarrod Hayne as a 5/8, because I think this is his position for the rest of his career. I really do. It's a wonder how good he really is as a half, you know, or you know, playing in the half, so forth. And then you've got Tonga and Samoa. You know, Tonga and Samoa, they've had a big, strong rivalry. It was the game of the week. It was absolutely tremendous atmosphere. But Tonga, they showed that they were a class above Samoa. They looked like they were playing in another level. And their halves were awesome. Hingano and Lolohia. My goodness, you know. Tonga finally have got two NRL halves playing for them. And suddenly they go from, you know, a team that struggles to beat Fiji and Samoa to a team that could contend for the championship. And it's just so exciting to see the development. I think this game against New Zealand will be really interesting this week. It's going to be the game of the round. You know, there's going to be lots of feeling, lots of atmosphere, but I think, you know, if you're going to go and watch that game live, you are in for a treat. Because, you know, the backstory with what's happened with Tamalolo, and then plus the form of both these teams, you know, it's almost, it's great to see. And I think I think this actually poses a bit of a problem for Australia, because, you know, New Zealand and Tonga and Fiji and, you know, and even England, they're all being tested at the moment by their competition. Australia, not really being tested at the moment, and it's going to be interesting. They're going to go through the tournament up until the quarters and semis without actually having to play a big team, and I don't know whether that's the best preparation in terms of their campaign.
Well, they were tested by England in game one.
But both teams were still very rusty. Like, I think
that's true. Yeah, yeah.
Like, England weren't at the best, but neither was Australia. And now, like, I think after the second round, I think Fiji improved. I think Tonga improved. I think New Zealand improved. And now they're just, you know, they're playing a lot more tougher games against each other. And I think it's just going to hold them in good stead. Whereas I think Australia, the draw gets easier for them. Now they're playing Lebanon. I think it's going to be like a similar game to what they played against France. And then they're suddenly into the quarters, and now they sort of had to pick it up a pace. Can they do it?
Well, it remains to be seen. I actually think Lebanon will be tougher than France. I think they will surprise a few of them. And I think the fact that there will be some familiar faces, Mitchell Moses, Robbie Farah, yeah, there will be, look, it is about a team, yes, but
yes,
but Lebanon has the potential to put some points on. So it remains to be seen. I thought, if anything, the way that England played very well against Lebanon and prevented them from scoring more tries. So I think Lebanon will probably learn a lot from that, because it was their first T1 sort of game. And so they'll probably learn a lot from that. And let's see what happens. But I just want to – I agree with everything you said. I just want to go back to the Fiji thing and Jarrod Hayne in particular. Yep. I kind of agree with you about Jarrod Hayne's position being 5/8. You know, that he's showing more and more that he is the reason why he's not being used as he normally has been. He doesn't have the same pace as he used to. He's not. In fact, what I saw, probably the try of the round was try of the World Cup so far was 90% Akilu Uwate. If you saw that try, you were thinking, you know, this was Jarrod Hayne of 2009. This was, he just split the defense and they couldn't hold him. He almost went all the way, but chose wisely to pass it to the center, I think, who scored it. I think it was one of their final tries. But you know, Jarryd Hayne's not like that anymore. He doesn't have the same speed, so he needs to now put his. He needs to work hard. He needs to apply himself, and the best place to apply yourself is in the halves, because you're always going to get the ball in your hand and you're responsible for making sure that the backs do their job. And he is doing the job that is expected of him, and that is why the Fijian back line is, all of them, they're on fire.
Yeah.
And so that's why I want to see that being tested in the quarterfinals. So that should be fantastic. I just want to say one more thing about Jarryd Hayne.
Yeah.
There has been, outside of World Cup, there has been some talk about him wanting to be shopped around to Sydney clubs, wanting out of the Gold Coast Titans. And that has led to, I got to say, that's led to a bit of a backlash from two very high-profile names. And there's a lot of negativity about Jarryd Hayne, which kind of doesn't surprise me, but bothers me a little bit online. But in particular, Mal Meninga came out and was very made some comment basically saying, I think Jarryd Hayne is entitled to basically work hard and give the Titans, give back to the Titans what they've put into him financially and the investment that they've made in him. Also, because I think people are a bit annoyed that Neil Henry sort of was ousted, despite the fact that it wasn't just Jarryd Hayne that had issues with him, it was also some of the other players. But anyway, first of all, the current Australian, let's get this right, the current Australian coach has come out and made very strong statements about Jarryd Hayne, basically saying he has no right to want to leave after what happened with Neil Henry. He should stay, right? He has no place, Mal Meninga, saying that, I don't believe. Remember, this is a gentleman that, despite being an absolute legend in the game, when Super League came around, said, what has the game done for me? This is, if you remember this, everyone, you don't have, I have a long memory. I don't hold grudges, but I do remember this statement from Mal Meninga. And so I think he has, I don't think the irony meter was working very well when he said that about Jarryd Hayne and about him giving back to the club that invested in him, when he said pretty much the same thing about the game that invested in him many, many years ago. But anyway, having said that, what I also found appalling was Laurie Daly in the commentary pretty much echoing what Mal Meninga said. I don't know if you heard the comments at all. This is prior to the Fiji game that was being televised. Mm. Made pretty much the same sort of comment saying, I think Jarryd Hayne, should just focus on, playing well for the Titans, and he basically shouldn't consider moving to Sydney or whatever. Now, I don't know whether any of that's true. Jarryd Hayne hasn't actually said anything about wanting to leave. For some reason, there's a media circus going on while the World Cup is going on. I think that might be distracting to him and to the boys in Fiji, but I don't know what your thoughts were. Just as a tangent on Mal Meninga and Laurie Daly, two absolutely big names in the game, current Australian coach and former New South Wales Blues coach, coming out very, very forcefully against Jarryd Hayne, basically making it sound like he's a selfish little brat, and he has no right to be. I thought that was very uncalled for. It wasn't necessary for them to be so political about Jarryd Hayne at this point, when we're trying to watch, a game about, watch the Fijians play and all that sort of stuff. And he hasn't actually come out and said anything, Jarryd Hayne, as far as I'm aware. So what were your thoughts on that, Tish? Do you have any comments to make?
Well, look, I think that Jarryd Hayne should do what Jarryd Hayne, what's best for Jarryd Hayne. And, I haven't actually heard any comments from Jarryd Hayne like you said, Dr. Tiso. But I think at the end of the day, this is the Rugby League World Cup that we're talking about here. I think that maybe, coaches and commentators should actually Maybe stick to what is actually happening at the moment and not talk about, you know, some of these other things and issues going on. You know, Jarryd Hayne's not the reason why Neil Henry is no longer at the Titans. And if anybody thinks that, then they're silly. If anybody, the Gold Coast, if that's the reason why they made the decision, they're silly as well. Because let's face it, Neil Henry did not win them a premiership. You know, the franchise went backwards under his watch. You know, it's not a player's fault. It's actually Neil Henry. And I think that if the more people realize, you know, hey, you're on the master of your own destiny in life, can't go around blaming other people, blaming people like Jarryd Hayne and so forth, who, to be honest with you, has brought, even with the negative publicity, has brought more publicity to your club than any other player. So, look, I think that the whole situation, I think there's, you know, from the very beginning, I've always suspected that it's kind of just, a lot of it's just media noise. I don't think it's as big or as you know, as problemsome as what everybody makes it out to be. But Jarryd Hayne, you know, he plays well, and you know, he plays well, he's controversial. He doesn't play well, he's controversial. People just love talking about him. And it's unfortunate, but it's kind of almost the burden he seems to have to carry, where no matter what he does, there's always going to be a section of the media, a section of the player group, a section of the ex-player group who want to make comments. And, you know, Laurie Daly, he was New South Wales coach this year. What is he blaming Jarryd Hayne for losing his job as New South Wales coach? Is that what it is? Like, you know, it's very bizarre, you know. Mal Meninga had it. You know, Mal Meninga could have chosen Jarryd Hayne, but chose not to. So, you know, so maybe they should probably come out and say what they really want to say, rather than sort of hiding behind the Titans' media beat up, which seems to happen. But, you know, look, Mal Meninga and Laurie Dale are great players in the game, and you know, maybe the opinions, you know, it's a tough situation. But I think that yeah, too much of a distraction for Jarryd Hayne. On the point of him moving into the halves, I think the other good thing about playing in the halves for Jarryd Hayne, rather than playing a position like a fullback, and I think Robbie Farish had actually learned it a little bit from this as well, is that when you're in the halves, you don't need to do that job that you did before, which was, you know, taking the ball, running all those running meters. You could focus more on becoming the attacking weapon for your team and sort of helping out. And I think that that's what Jarryd Hayne is loving. And, you know, the Lebanon game, I did see Robbie Farrow moving into dummy half every so often, helping out. And I actually think that was a bit of a negative to Lebanon. And I think that if Robbie would just embrace the halfback position that he's playing at the moment, I actually think that he will actually become a better halfback. I think Lebanon will actually play better, because I think it was just too disruptive. But that's another player in transition. But anyway, that's all I've got to say about Robbie Farah, and then my side. Oh, wait, Jarryd Hayne and my side on Robbie Farah. So
that's all right. Well, we are ready to move on to, because Robbie Farah is involved in the next tackle. So here we go. Tackle three. Right, there was that bell. England are literally hungry for success. That's what we learned this weekend.
Oh, yes.
As winger Jermaine McGilvery showed when he bit Robbie Farah's arm in a spiteful incident in the England versus Lebanon game. Completely unnecessary act with no hint of foul play leading up to it. Wayne Bennett would be concerned about the lack of discipline in the English side. And Tish, as I say this, the latest news, let me just check NRL.com. Surprise, surprise. Jermaine McGilvery has been found not guilty by the Rugby League World Cup judiciary. Now, I don't know about you, Tish, but they showed a very clear, you know, video evidence of McGilvery taking a bite out of Robbie Farah's arm as if it was a big, big piece of KFC chicken in a bucket. It was obvious how they found him not guilty. You know, apparently the argument was that I'm reading this now in NRL.com. McGilvery argued that Farah had pressed his forearm against his nose and mouth, forcing him to gasp for air. I kid you not, this is what the legal argument was. that he basically, Robbie Farah, put his arm in his mouth. Now, I don't know about this. If you actually watch the video, you see him lunging forward to take a bite out of Farah's forearm. Now, that's just ridiculous. Tish, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, you know, on that outcome. McGilvery is clear to play. Did you see the incident at all in the game?
Look, I did see the incident. I did see the game and so forth. And it was actually very similar to the first biting charge that happened in the PNG Wales match as well, where there was a incident of biting that happened. But, you know, I think the people to blame is actually the England team's catering. But obviously...
Well, we always knew that they were they don't have really good food there over in England, do they?
Yeah. Well, I believe it was Marco Pierre White that was that was doing the catering. And unfortunately, he used one of his celebrity chefs from Hell's Kitchen, Willie Mason. And, you know, Mason kind of dropped maybe McGilvery's plate, unfortunately. So he was starving out in the field and had to lunge it at Mr. Farah's arm. But look, yeah. I've never... accidental biting, I always thought that is a ridiculous sort of argument that you didn't really mean to bite him, but you were trying to, you know, breathe and, you know, your mouth opened and he stuck his hand in his mouth. But then when I actually saw the footage and I actually saw where his head was, and he was looking... I mean, I think he had his eyes closed and he was just, you know, it was completely away from where Robbie's arm was. I actually think that McGilvery is innocent, right?
Really? Wow.
I do, because the thing is, like, you know, he didn't really have room to breathe, and, you know, people sort of, people walk around life with their mouth open, you know what I mean? And, like, sometimes you just need to have your mouth open, and if somebody else puts your arm over your nose, it's going to look like you're biting him. So, look, I didn't see the like, I know that Robbie Farah had some teeth marks there.
Well, he did raise it during the game at one point, because it actually led to a bit of a punch-up, that tackle, because I think he sort of lashed out at him and then all of a sudden players came in from everywhere. And then we saw him sort of pointing at his arm saying, "He bit me," and McGilvery saying, "What? I didn't do that." You know, so...
The same thing, so, and I said, and I didn't refer to an incident that happened in the PNG Wales game where I think it was a PNG player that was accused and was also let off, because same sort of thing, you know, yes, there was a biting allegation. Yes, the mouth had contact with the arm, but the reality is, you know, when you're in, you know, multiple man tackles, you know, and... you know, you accidentally stick, well, you know, you sort of, you're trying to get air, you open your mouth, a hand could go in there, right? So, you know, if he's biting down hard on him, I think it's a different story, but I think it's more of a, you know, yeah, look, I've got, yeah, so I'm not a dental expert, but I think these incidences, you know, after these two incidences, I think you can actually accidentally bite somebody. Just with the situations that these two players were in, so
normally look, I would agree with you, Tish, but I think the video evidence, that they found it a few minutes later after the incident, and they showed it very clearly, and you could, I would have to politely disagree with you, Tish. I think the evidence shows, if you actually look at what happened, and I can't believe that they actually sort of fell for this in the judiciary, but. You can clearly see that, you know, it's not like, look, it's not like Farah was giving him with a facial with his forearm. You know, as you often see in State of Origin, Thurston sort of rubs someone's face and blah, blah, blah. You know, out of all the times we've seen that this year in the NRL, have we ever seen any player sort of go, "Oh, no, there's five fingers in my face. I'm going to bite one of them accidentally." You know, never. Never has that happened. I think the emotion got to Jermaine, and I think for whatever reason he just resented the fact that there was something in his face apart from a wad of cash,
what?
You know, I don't know, these Super League players. I think they get very well paid, And maybe this is the first time that that some of that Lebanese...
Mal Meninga, have you taken over Dr. T's body here? Complaining about players who get paid lots of money.
No. But look, I don't know. I just thought the evidence sort of was very clear. But anyway, let's agree to disagree. You were talking about PNG, and PNG is involved in the next tackle. So here we go. Tackle number 4. PNG are good, but I think they need to focus. They showed in the first round that I think they are the most entertaining team in this World Cup. They certainly play a lot of unstructured, very entertaining football. But I think they failed to show us how to combat a composed Irish side, which I believe pushed them all the way in the round 2 game. The most disappointing, I think, of the South Pacific teams on the weekend, even though they won, I don't think they sort of showed us that they improved from round 1. What do you think this means for the rest? First of all, do you agree? Secondly, do you think this means something for the PNG's performances throughout the rest of the tournament? What do you think they need to improve if they're going to get to the quarterfinals and beyond?
Look, I do agree. You know, PNG, firstly, Saturday night for round 2, the PNG Island game and then the Samoa versus Tonga game, two absolutely phenomenal games with great atmosphere in both those games. It was a great night for International Rugby League and a great night for the World Cup. The PNG Island game, it was it was nail biting stuff, and you know, the Irish, they brought their best, and this is kind of unfortunate to see Ireland. You know, they're probably not going to make it now to the next round. I think they, it's either them or PNG that will miss out, and we don't want either of these teams to miss out. Simply because they're an underdog team. They've got, you know, they may not have sort of the NRL stars, but they seem to have pretty good game management. And it was good to see, PNG, who are sort of raw ability, speed, toughness, the typical sort of South Pacific country taking on, a team that's, probably doesn't have that natural talent, but has that game management ability, and it was a real interesting contest to see that. But then, look, you're right about PNG. You know, I think they just looked a bit too unorganized. There were some sets of 6 where they just, got caught on the last tackle. There were others where they sort of just, it was 6 hit-ups and that was it. And they didn't know what they were doing. And there's a period there, it didn't look like they were going to score a try. In the end, the try they did score was a bit freakish. They didn't really think about the game and how to manage the game properly. And I think all those factors that sort of played into it, it really showed that PNG, they just need that, they just need those 1 or 2 players that will actually, not just play in the moment, but sort of, play the 80 minutes, play the long game, I suppose, and sort of think about, all right, okay, look, we don't need to score on every set. We don't need to just hit it up. Let's change it up. You know, those players that could sort of read and feed the game, and just if they could have 1 or 2 organisers like that, I think that's what they're lacking. And I think that's what played into their performance. And that is why Tonga and Fiji in particular are ahead of them. And maybe to a lesser point, Samoa. But I think Samoa needs a bit of that as well. But PNG, look, it's great to watch them play, though. Port Moresby is absolutely on fire. And wouldn't it be great if we could play all the World Cup games there? It would be phenomenal.
Well, they've had 2 sellouts, so they've done very, very well. And of course, the passion coming from that area, when their team is there playing, it's unbelievable. So, look, I think that leads to, in terms of the interest in the South Pacific nations, that leads to, I think, the 5th tackle. So here we go, tackle number 5. Samoa versus Tonga could become a legitimate Origin style fixture among the Pacific Island nations. So we saw the passion, the skills, the rivalry, the history, and now they've got the attention of the world. So this is all that Tonga versus Samoa needs to become a legitimate Origin style fixture between these nations. This could be the catalyst, I think, for rugby league creating a stronghold in the region. So how do you think we could capitalize? So I've got some thoughts, Tish. I'll just run, run you through some ideas. We've talked about this before, but I think more than ever, after we saw what happened on the weekend with Tonga and Samoa, you know, the rivalry is building, the history is being written as we speak. There's a potential, I think, for us to establish a proper maybe alternative during the Origin series or at some point during the year. Potentially we could come up with a South Pacific Cup tournament where we could have a Polynesian Cup where Samoa plays Tonga and a Melanesian Cup where the PNG play Fiji, and the winner of those two will play off against each other for a South Pacific Island Super Cup.
Not a
Tish,
bad idea.
What are your thoughts on this? Not a bad idea, eh? And you know what? Yeah. This is one of those things which a few years ago, it's one of those ideas that you would have gone, that's a Dr. T, silly idea. But now we're starting to hear these things from legitimate sort of, you know, analysts and people in the game, and even some of the players themselves saying Samoa versus Tonga, it's not just something that was cute a couple of years ago. It's become a genuine sort of draw card in the World Cup and beyond. And why not make that a regular thing? Why not build this rivalry, have it as an every year one-off test with some stakes, you know, bring not stakes as in like barbecue steaks, but like with a bit of high stakes, winning the cup, you know, and then after you play that, you don't just sort of go around going, okay, well, we beat Samoa or Tonga, but you know, you get to actually then go up to a Super Cup level where you compete against either PNG or Fiji, who themselves are building very nicely. So yep. This could actually help all four nations.
Well, look, what I think you could do, I've heard the suggestion of playing a three test match series between Samoa and Tonga, because the rivalry is as strong as New South Wales and Queensland, if not probably even more, if you think about the cultural and the national backgrounds that are involved. And if you played a Samoa and Tonga test match, you know, first round in New Zealand, you know, you'd get a, well, you had a sellout. Was it a sellout at the stadium that they had? I'm pretty sure it was. It was an absolute great atmosphere. But you'd have one test match there that would be sold out at a suburban ground. You'd do the second test match in sort of Sydney or Brisbane. Again, you'd have, you know, close to a sellout, if not a sellout, at the actual, you know, in Sydney. And then you do the final test match, you know, one year in Samoa and then the other in Tonga, right? So a three test series across three different nations. I think, you know, I could see that, you know, and then as the years go on, just like State of Origin, as the years went on, you'd see the rivalry just get stronger. I wouldn't call it a Polynesian Cup. I'd actually take two strong players from Tonga and Samoa and actually sort of put the names together. You know, maybe like a, you know, Nigel Vergara, I don't know, Tongan. You know, who's the great Tongan player out there?
Isn't the great Samoa from Tonga?
Yeah, the great Samoa.
So why don't you just call it the Samoa Tonga Cup?
The Samoa Tonga Cup. Maybe, yeah. But maybe something like that. Then you could have the Bi Nandruki Cup with PNG and Fiji.
Oh wow, there's an idea.
Yeah, and you know, and then as you said, yeah, maybe that one-off test match where the winner of each two play each other. But I think you could definitely do that. You know, and you know, have a game in PNG, have another game locally in Sydney, like do the double header thing, maybe like when you do it in Australia, and then have another game out in Fiji, you know, do the same thing with the Samoa Tonga. I think the more these nations play together, the better they will be. And I think now you're seeing with Tamalolo and Fifita and some of the other players that are playing for these nations, a lot of, you know, I think these players down the track are going to want to play for their nation more than they're going to want to play Origin. And I think it's great to try and mix that in. And if you could somehow involve New Zealand in it as well, because during State of Origin, they're doing nothing, right? So wouldn't it be great to also see New Zealand play, in a similar sort of test series against another nation or even a combined islander, island nation during the State of Origin? I think it'd be great for rugby league. And I think this is the way that you grow rugby league international. This is how you bring the competition closer together. The other great thing I want to bring out about Tonga, they're actually going through the statistics of Tonga and their rugby league, not just their rugby league, but their sporting history and the number of players that from a Tongan background that are in the NFL, the number of players, the number of, you know, Tongans that have gone on to do sumo wrestling and all these sort of sports. And it's great to see that rugby league has become that sport for them that is bringing, you know, some more acclaim to the country of Tonga. And I think, yeah, wouldn't it be great? I just think World Cup 2017, the Tongans, they're a real chance.
Well, they are. And not only that, I think all of the teams have played sort of sufficiently well that, you know, by the end of this, we'll say, look, they've done enough to sort of increase interest back home. Fiji certainly has, and I predict that they will go a lot further than they have in the past. Tonga probably will do the same, and certainly if they get close to defeating or actually do defeat New Zealand, wow, what will that do for the game in the region? I mean, when you compare it to the fact that there's a lot of, rugby union would be considered the top contact sport in those areas, but rugby league is biting at its heels, I think, and I think this World Cup has the potential to sort of bring it over the edge and sort of establish a pathways, establish regular fixtures, you know, establish things that rugby union has squandered when it was going so well internationally, you know, in the World Cup many years ago, and they've kind of squandered all that success that they had when England won many years ago. So I think that's something to think about, that there's a lot that they can do. But you mentioned New Zealand. New Zealand features in the next tackle. Here we go. Tackle number 6. Roger Tuivasa-Sheke and New Zealand are under the radar yet again. Look, he is performing exceptionally well. I think he's pretty much put on 2 man of the match performances in a row. He's been that good. And I guess the question still remains, what will happen when they're tested? We've seen what happens when they're up against opposition that where they've been able to run riot and they've done very well and they have not taken the foot off the pedal. But it will be different against Tonga. I don't know whether Tonga will win, but it'll be their first real test of a nation that is not a struggling nation. It's got several NRL stars. Who knows? Are New Zealand under the radar yet again, or will something fall apart for them this weekend? What do you think, Tish?
Well, there's going to be lots of feeling in this game, isn't there? Not just from a Tongan point of view, but also from the New Zealand point of view. You know, they didn't like what happened with Tamalolo. They're rallying behind their coach, Kidwell. Kidwell's talking about this New Zealand brand of rugby league, this different style, the high risk, high reward, sort of flavor that they're bringing to the game. New Zealand have been the form team. I think it's there's no two ways about it. They've, you know, Samoa, a real good team. They're able to completely destroy them in the first round. They did the same thing against Scotland. Now they're taking on Tonga, and they're going to want to really win this game. So I think they're going to be focused. You know, the only time that sometimes New Zealand fall away a bit sometimes is when they are playing Minnow Nations and they seem to not sort of turn up. But I think now, with all that's happened, they're going to bring their A game. And for Tonga, this is their test. This is their proving ground. This is what they've been playing for. This is the reason why they defected, because they want to show the world what Tonga can do. And there's a real belief in their team. And, I heard Britt Kamali say something similar like, you know, if Tonga can beat New Zealand, or even if they could, stay competitive with them, that will do enormous things for their confidence for the rest of the tournament. And this is really the key for them. If they could do really well this weekend against New Zealand, they will then have the confidence to maybe go on with it for the World Cup. And, you know, for years, I think we've talked about this, Dr. T, you know, New Zealand, Tonga, and Australia, they've been the top three nations, and we've been waiting for that chance, waiting for that team, you know, that second-tier nation to sort of, bump themselves up there. And I think, you know, Fiji, they sort of, you know, they made the semi-finals in 08 and 13. But I think this is a better team than what the Fijians had in those years. If you think about, you know, Samoa, they've had some really great players. A lot of their players have played even international for New Zealand. But this Tongan team is stronger than them. And, you know, what I really like is their halves. Their NRL halves. They're week in, week out NRL halves. They've got Hapawadi who played. I don't know if Hapawadi played for Australia, but he certainly played for New South Wales. And, you know, you've got Havili, who's also a dummy half, a full-time dummy half in the NRL for the Warriors. Or actually, I think it's now the Dragons. But anyway, you've got a spine that essentially is an NRL spine, which a South Pacific team has never had this before, but now they do, and all of a sudden they're world beaters. And I just can't wait for this game. Let's can they play tomorrow, Dr. T? I want this game to start right now. I just don't know what I'm going to do until this game starts. So,
well, you know, given that you're so keen, I think it's fitting that we close the book on the six tackles and we go to our tips. So here we go. All right, so our tips, well, we got 6 out of 7 last weekend. Remembering these were tips that we gave at the start of the tournament without the benefit of seeing form as we go into each round. So the only one you got wrong was you picked USA to beat Italy, and I picked Ireland to beat PNG. So I think that's fair to say I was closer than you were on that one. But that means that our totals now go to you've cracked 100. You're at 103 for the year, and I'm at 114. So there's still a chance. There's still a chance, yes, if I completely stuff this up. And not forgetting, we're not just tipping the games. We've also got our wacky predictions, which will give us some points. So we'll revisit that at the end of this tournament to see how we went. Or let's go into our round three matches. So there's 7 matches again. These are all important, and we'll go into what each one might mean for the quarterfinals. So Fiji versus Italy. So let's just do a quick go. I'll tell you what the tips are, and then we'll give our actual thoughts about what's going to happen. Right. Fiji versus Italy. At the beginning of the tournament, we both tipped Fiji. I haven't really changed from that. I would like Italy to win, but I think Fiji are going to be very strong. Tish, any different thoughts that you have?
No, look, I think Fiji is going to win, but I really think it'd be a contest, and I'm looking forward to seeing a great game.
Awesome. New Zealand versus Tonga. This is the one that we've been looking forward to. Look, you tipped New Zealand at the beginning of this. I tipped Tonga. I think I went out on a limb initially. As soon as I heard that Tomalolo was playing for Tonga, I thought, and for Fida as well, I think I thought at the time, well, that's enough for me. I think New Zealand aren't going to go well. But like we said, they're under the radar. We thought at the beginning, yeah, of the tournament that they wouldn't do so well, that they're slipping a little bit. And I guess I thought that they would be slipping enough that Tonga would overtake them. I still think it's possible. I still think Tonga might win.
Yes.
So what are your thoughts, Tish?
Well, look, I think New Zealand have responded well to all the drama and tragedy they've had. So, I still think they're their favourites for this game. But, look, I won't be surprised if Tonga can beat them. So, game of the round for me for this one, definitely.
Samoa versus Scotland, no contest there. Both of us know that we predicted Samoa, and I think that will be the case. So, nothing really controversial there. Australia
Johnny
versus
Walker
Lebanon.
Going home for Scotland.
That's right.
So, anyway.
The big Johnny Walker, yeah. Okay. Australia versus Lebanon. Look, Australia, they're on fire. They're not only world champions, but they've actually been playing like world champions. So I think the only way that Lebanon will win is if referee Bill Harrigan is back and basically polices the play the ball. That's the only way that Lebanon will win, by getting a 50-1 penalty count in their favour. Australia up for sure. Let's move on. PNG versus USA. Based on what we've seen, I think we both agree PNG will easily win against the USA. Nothing controversial there. The next one, however, beginning of the tournament, I thought Wales would be better than they are at the moment. I tipped Wales to beat Ireland, but you tipped Ireland to beat Wales. I think based on what we've seen in the last two matches, I think Ireland will win that one. So I'm going to unfortunately possibly lose that tip unless something goes wrong. We never know. We never know when they go against each other whether Wales will actually have a good game plan against them. So who knows? But Ireland, out of all the home nations that are non-England, have definitely impressed more than Scotland and Wales, I would say. So any thoughts on that one, Ireland and Wales?
Well, I think it's going to be a great contest. Actually, I don't think that. I think Ireland's going to smash them. And I think that, look, I've been impressed with Ireland, and, even with this win, if PNG win, they still won't get out of, well, actually they might, because they would have won all their games, and so would PNG, right? So, don't know how it's going to look. So that's what I think about Pool C. You know, Pool C is actually much stronger than what everybody anticipated, and unfortunately, one of the teams that are undefeated could be knocked out of the tournament. There you go.
Well, no, Ireland lost, though. So,
No. Yes, they did.
Yeah, they lost to PNG. Yep. So, yeah, that's not... It's very unlikely. In fact, there's no way that someone that's undefeated will get knocked out.
So our Rugby League Republic... Rugby League World Cup, I should say. Let's just do 16 teams. Make it simple.
Well, I think that's... Yeah, we'll talk about this at the end of the tournament. I think they... look, they try to structure it so that they get, the most kind of... competitive games, but I think as we've seen that actually there've been a lot of floggings, so you'd be better off just making four teams of four, and splitting the T1 nations across all of them, because I think that would more likely get you competitive games, look, they're going to learn this, so you got to rank them appropriately, you got to give them an opportunity to play each other outside of the World Cup circle. Or cycle, so for instance, that if you're putting Wales against Fiji, that this year they're going to be consistently close, as opposed to Fiji putting on 70 points. You know what I mean? Like you don't if these teams play each other very often, and you've got a good ranking system, you can sort of distribute them according to the rankings across the different pools, and then you won't have the number of blowouts that we've been seeing. So I think that's another thing to think about. Look, the only other thing apart from is France versus England. I think we both tipped England. I think we're going to see England win that one quite easily. So nothing really controversial there. I do want to draw your attention, though, to one last thing, which is the impact that some of these games will have on the quarterfinals. So in some cases, some teams have already been decided for the quarterfinals, and the quarterfinal draw has been released. So here's what's going to happen. The first quarterfinal will be Friday, so next Friday, the 17th of November at Darwin Stadium, and it will involve Australia versus either, I don't know how they're going to work this out, either the Pool B third place team or the Pool C winner. Remind me again, hang on.
PNG and Ireland are in that one.
So it could be either one of those. Okay. The second.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Because then you're also talking about the Pool B number three team, which would be, I'd say it would be probably Samoa, right? So it's either could Samoa, be Samoa or. Yeah.
That's right. Could be Samoa. Or Saturday the 18th of November is the second quarterfinal at Christchurch Stadium, and it will involve Tonga versus either the Pool A third place team or the Pool D winner, which is, let me just quickly have a look, Pool A third place team. So it will be either Lebanon or, where is Pool D?
Pool D is Fiji.
Lebanon or Fiji? Well, that will be interesting. So that's dependent on what? That's dependent on whether Fiji lose, I believe, or something like
Yeah, well, Fiji will win Pool D if they win, you know, against Italy. I think Italy have to win by 50 points to outrank Fiji. So, because only one winner goes out from Pool D, so that's why that is the case.
Right. So how do they determine whether... Okay. Because either Lebanon, assuming Lebanon are third place team in Pool A, which they probably will be, so either Lebanon or Fiji will either play Tonga or New Zealand, which is the third quarterfinal, same day, 18th of November, Saturday at Wellington Regional Stadium. So New Zealand will play either Lebanon or Fiji. I don't know how they work. How they work that out, I think, will depend on what. So see how confusing this is? This should not be confusing. Let me just see what the NRL.com thing says. If the current Pool A standings remain... okay. So the third place team in Pool B will be decided by... So we said that Samoa versus Scotland. Okay. So I don't know how the other pools... so PNG's got to be in there somewhere as well, isn't it? So the only other two teams that are remaining would have to be Australia. So I'm a bit confused.
No, we went for Australia. Australia is either going to play, you know, the Samoa, which is the third placed round team, well, pool B team, or the Team C winner, which is PNG. So it's either Australia versus PNG or Australia versus Samoa. Then you've got, let's just say for argument's sake, New Zealand beat Tonga. Yep. You're going to have New Zealand either take on the winner of Pool D, which would be Fiji, or the Pool A third-ranked team, which is going to be Lebanon probably. So it's New Zealand versus Lebanon or New Zealand versus Fiji. Then you're going to have Tonga, you know, as the second team. They're going to play... Okay, now I'm in your boat. Okay. Who are they going to play? They're going to play... So then you've got Tonga in England, and they're going to play...
I think we've proven a point here, which is the tournament is confusing as hell for the regular punter to work out what kind of permutations and combinations are required. Here's what I know, okay? Here's another thing. Unless France can upset England, which won't happen, Lebanon will qualify for a historic quarterfinal berth because they'll have a top three finish in Pool A. So what will happen there is they will play, I believe they will play Tonga. But Pool A, first or second place team, it says not Australia. Okay. Sunday the 19th of November. So in Melbourne, there will be, I think England will play England. Either the Pool B third place team or Pool C winner. So PNG, most likely. So again.
So it's either England or Samoa or PNG. Yeah.
No, it's not Samoa. It'll be England versus PNG in the fourth quarter final, I think. Does that make sense?
There you go. So.
So Fiji is the Pool D that we're getting confused with.
Yeah.
And ladies and gentlemen, make yourself a cup of tea and enjoy the ride as we try and work out. This is more complicated than high school algebra, I think.
And look, this article was brought to you by the NRL.com. I've got to say, on the Rugby League World Cup website, they've got nothing about this because I have been trying to work this out.
No. There's a tournament draw thing, which actually, it doesn't actually show you the permutation. It just shows a very inaccurate, it looks like a linear, kind of like when you watch the Australian Open tennis. And you know exactly who you got to play, who you got to beat to get to the final. It's not like that at all, ladies and gentlemen. It's not really a direct line from pool A to all the way down to whatever. So I don't know how they can get away with that. It's just an inaccurate sort of, don't believe the Rugby League World Cup website and their tournament draw section, which is completely ridiculous. I think we've got it right. I think we've got Australia potentially. So look, there's a lot of things that could happen, but if it's based on what we think will happen, Australia will be playing Samoa in the first one. Tonga will be playing most likely Lebanon. New Zealand will be playing most likely, I think, Fiji.
Yep.
Potentially. Actually, it depends. It could be Tonga, Fiji. It could be New Zealand, Fiji, or vice versa. And the last one will be most likely England versus PNG.
Yeah,
I think that's the most likely outcome. So what that means is that we will see what happens next week, because any number of upsets, you know, could completely change things around. Because again, we've got a funny situation where the pools are sorted, especially pools B, C, and D. You've got teams playing cross pools, which normally doesn't happen in, say, like the Soccer World Cup.
Which is where the 14-team development comes in, yeah.
That's right. So that's why it's even more confusing, because when you look at the leaderboard, it's kind of – is it a combined leaderboard? I think that's how they work it out, which is even more confusing. So really they should just stick to a regular way of doing things so that there's no confusion. You've got to top the table or you've got to come second. You know, that's probably the best way to do it. The top two in each pool – teams of four, make it 16 teams, make it through the quarterfinals. I think that's the easiest way to do it. But anyway, that's a lesson learned for next time. But yeah.
And on next week's episode, how the NFL end of season works.
That's right.
Or how the basketball players work out. But it's just as confusing.
We've ended it on a confusing note. So hopefully that has not led you to abandon the game, because it's going to be a great series of games. There's a lot to look forward to. My bet will be New Zealand and Tonga will be probably the match of the tournament so far. I think there'll be a lot of fire there. There'll be a lot of feeling. It'll probably be closer than people expect. And if Tonga can do the almost impossible and create a boil over, it will do magnificent things for the game and over there and in the South Pacific in general, and it will add a bit of a rocket up this tournament, and send the media sort of in a frenzy, because Tonga is unheard of in terms of being a tier one nation, but all of a sudden they have the potential to make it. And to really establish themselves as a force in this tournament. Of course, I don't know if any team will beat Australia, but you never know. If they can beat New Zealand, they might gain enough confidence to do something against Australia, should they meet up in the semis or the finals. So, Tish, that is a good way to wrap up this podcast. There's certainly a lot going on. Look, I look forward to round three. I hope you guys do as well. I'd like to just sort of say a quick shout out and thank you to those of you listening out there who are new fans to our podcast. Thank you so much for supporting us, whether you found us through Facebook or whether you found us through our website, ourrepublic.com. Send us an email, ourrepublic@gmail.com, if you've got any thoughts about what we can do to improve our podcast or any ideas you've got whatsoever. Don't forget to subscribe to our iTunes podcast as well, so you can get all your updates directly to your smartphone when we put out the new podcast episode. So Tish, over to you to wrap this up and look forward to round three of the World Cup.
Well, Dr. T, thank you once again for another great episode. I've had lots of fun talking to you about rugby league, about this World Cup, and I know you've had fun too. But look, I hope you listeners had lots of fun listening to us. But unfortunately, that's all the time that we have on this edition of the Rugby League Republic. We're your hosts, Tish and Dr. T. And join us next time on the Rugby League Republic. Bye for now.